Well, this is totally not Danzig, and you're listening to the Shred Shack.
Greetings, folks. I'm Dan Mack.
Hey, this is Chris Mack.
Welcome you to episode 167 of the Shred Shack Podcast, your premier source of news and uninformed yet heavily biased opinions pertaining to all things heavy metal, airing bi-weekly on iTunes, Mixcloud, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, and Spotify, as well as airing from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, Monday nights on Overkill Radio. That is as of this episode. Now, what will happen for the next episode, I don't know yet, because I have to move. We have to move homes from our normal place of hosting to a different place, and I have to transfer every episode over, and that will take me some time.
So, yeah, but we're still going to be on Spotify, though, right?
We are still good. Definitely going to be on Spotify. In fact, we are currently on Spotify twice.
Oh. So.
Yeah, because as soon as you make an account with this other place, you're automatically on Spotify.
Oh, okay. That's cool. That's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah. So basically, like, the first five episodes, the first original five episodes are now up on a different account, but I am slowly uploading the rest to that account now, which I'm hoping to get done before the 30th. So.
Oh, so, like, in 5 days?
Yes. Well, the in 5 days the site shuts down, and then like the only way to access our podcast is through Mixcloud until I get it all squared away. Which nobody really listens to us through Mixcloud. So.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yes, mm-hmm. I would assume that Spotify was the way to go.
Yeah. So let's get started with Previously On.
So Previously On, we ended our last podcast with a little bit of a bet. About our albums on blast, and yeah, I muffed up pretty good. I muffed up real good, actually.
I'll say it again.
I muffed up real good, buddy. Real good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because when you listen to it, it's like literally in the last minute and a half.
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely the last minute and a half of the podcast. I was scrolling through the timeline, like, waiting for it, and then all of a sudden, oh yeah, I totally be in for that. Like, fuck. God damn it.
Yeah, we just gotta see how prepared I am for today's discussion anyway, so.
I'm prepared. So.
I know you're prepared, but I can rattle off some shit, so.
Well, I mean, it is your favorite band, so you probably know more than me just going off the top of your head, so you're good.
We'll see.
All right, so also Previously On, I had talked that I was going to continue going through the Wikipedia page for the novel Dune. They have a section about what they've influenced as far as like popular culture and stuff like that. And of course, there's a music section. And I'm just going to go like every podcast we do, we're going to talk about something that was inspired by Dune. The last podcast I talked about a French, a couple other different things, but they've been making a career of this for a long time. I listened to their 1997 debut record for my album of the day, and yeah, it was actually really good. So it's like this is also one of those things where kind of slept on them for a little while. I only know the name. I've only listened to maybe one or two tracks. Like I listened to a full album, and I really did enjoy them. So there's a line in the movies, and I think it's in the book where Paul Atreides says the sleeper is awakened, and that is now me. So there it goes.
Right on.
Previously on, we had discussed that I was going to check out the second new Jethro Tull single, Sad City Sisters. It's definitely a Jethro Tull song. There's really nothing much more you can say. It's very much in vein of like. Some of the stuff that I heard on Aqualung when I did that for an album of the day. So yeah, it's definitely a Jethro Tull song, and they really haven't changed. No, I wouldn't say that in a negative way. I mean, they really like, you know what Jethro Tull sounds like. Again, we've talked about the flute, talked about the initial sound of the band. Of course, Ian Anderson's vocals haven't changed in the last 50 years. So there is that.
Uh-huh.
We had also discussed Metal Mafia, a keyboardist by the name of JJ passed away, and I figured I was going to take a look at what Metal Mafia was all about, because apparently they had three albums out. They only have one album available on Spotify called Carnival of Broken Dreams. They are described as a hybrid metal band, and there are definitely lots of influences here. It's okay, but it's very there's a lot of like rap metal there that sounds very dated. But the songs I listen to, I prefer the female clean choruses. So there's like usually a male rapper type, maybe a little bit of like a harsh vocal, but then the female vocalist usually tends to take the choruses, and they're a lot better. They're not pigeonholed into any one particular style, and it seemed like they would be a fun show, but back in like 2002. And like I said, Spotify only has one album out. It's from like 2000. It's from like 2020. So it's like it's almost like they're trying to do a resurgence of nu metal sound or something like that. Like I don't think I would go out of my way to listen to them, but I would not go out of my way to turn them off either. So they're just kind of there.
Okay, fair enough.
All right, and last but not least, previously on we had talked about I think Rock and Roll Coloring was putting out a new coloring book. I think it's for Megadeth that we had discussed, and we are curious whether they had an Iron Maiden one out. It sounds like something that they would do for Iron Maiden, and yes, in fact, they do have a coloring book for Iron Maiden album covers and Iron Maiden artwork out there currently.
Muy excelente.
Yeah. And that's it for previously on.
All right. So let's just take away the best part of that. You muffed up, so...
I done muffed up. As soon as I heard it, I'm like, shit, that was...
Speaking of people who muffed up, let's talk about old business.
All right, old business. Iced Earth guitarist John Schaefer, he muffed up, as we've been talking about for almost a year now. Holy shit, it's been almost a year.
It feels like yesterday.
Like we should also mention that we are recording this Christmas night. Christmas night at 10 o'clock at night. We're exhausted. We're full of dessert. And I'm ready for bed, but we are just getting going here on Shred Shack.
That's dedication right there for you.
Oh, yeah. Because when I messaged you, I was like, oh, man, please, please, please tell me.
You were praying. I know. That's why you asked. I was like, no, you got to do it.
I was like, God damn it. No, all right. So he is one of more than two dozen members of the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys who are being sued by District of Columbia Attorney General Carl Racine in an effort to recover the millions of dollars the city spent to defend the U.S. Capitol during the January 6th attack. According to CNN, the lawsuit filed in federal court in Washington, D.C. accuses 31 members of the extremist groups of conspiring to terrorize the district on January 6th. Calling their actions a coordinated act of domestic terrorism. The lawsuit cites the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871, a federal law created after the Civil War to protect civil rights and, as Racine noted, to protect against vigilantes and insurrectionists, specifically. So even though he's cooperating, he's still being sued by the District of Columbia.
Not surprised. Oh,
for sure.
He's still muffed up.
Oh, yeah, he most certainly muffed up. Most certainly muffed up. All right, some other old business here. We are going to talk about the Nirvana lawsuit. We have talked about this before. I'm just going to read pretty much straight from the article until I feel that we don't need to cover it anymore. So Nirvana has filed a motion to dismiss the recent lawsuit filed over the cover of the band's iconic album, Nevermind. This past August, Spencer Eldon, the man who claims he was the baby featured in the image, sued the surviving members of Nirvana as well as the estate of Kurt Cobain. He alleges the photo of the baby reaching for $1 in a swimming pool violated federal child pornography statutes and argues child sexual exploitation. But Nirvana, as well as Kurt Cobain's widow, Courtney Love, are asking the court to throw out the lawsuit, saying Eldon's claim that the photograph of the Nevermind cover is child pornography is, quote, not serious, and insisting that his claim is barred by the applicable statute of limitations. Federal child pornography law has a 10-year statute of limitations beginning when a victim, quote, reasonably discovers the violation itself or the harm caused by it. They're Request for Dismissal is quoted as saying, Eldon has spent 3 decades profiting from a celebrity as a self-anointed Nirvana baby, reads the motion, which was filed on Wednesday, December 22nd. He has reenacted the photograph in exchange for a fee many times. He has had the album title Nevermind tattooed across his chest. He's appeared on a talk show wearing a self-parodying nude-colored onesie. He has autographed copies of the album cover for sale on eBay, and he has used the connection to try to pick up women. The motion also adds that Eldon's claim that the photograph of the Nirvana album cover is child pornography is on his face not serious. A brief examination of the photograph or Eldon's own conduct, not to mention the photograph's presence in the homes of millions of Americans who, on Eldon's theory, are guilty of felony possession of child, makes that clear. So, yeah. They're pretty much saying that this guy pretty much has been profiting from it from day one, and that his claim is pretty much nonsense.
Yeah, he was profiting. He was profiting from it from day one because he did get that dollar.
He was swimming for it for a long time, and he got it. He got it, and then some.
He got that dollar.
The thing is, we've been talking about this for a while since August, as the article says. And I think even like we had mentioned, like this doesn't seem plausible at all. Like it seems so ridiculous. Like it seems like a cash grab, and like maybe maybe it's not working for him as much anymore. You know, because he's not a baby anymore. I mean, he can say he's a baby on the Nirvana. He can say he's a baby on the cover, but dude, you're like a 35-year-old man now. Just like no, get over it. So there's that.
Yeah.
All right. That would wrap it up for old business here.
So then let's go on to new business.
New business. All right. So we usually do album releases, new album releases. I have zero for this week.
However, I have nothing either.
However, I have sent this list to you. It's the Rolling Stones Top 10 metal albums of 2021.
And I did not read it, so this is a visceral reaction.
All right, so this is a visceral reaction. I actually made a playlist that I put down. I put all of these albums in a playlist and I listened to them all. And yeah, these are quite good records. So we're going to start from number 10 and just work our way up to number 1 and just go from there. And these will be our new releases for this podcast. And this will be the last one of 2021 for us. Since that we're going to be due to record in 2022.
Yep.
All right. So I'm going to try and pronounce it. It's a Panopticon? Panopticon. Yeah, sure. Panopticon. And the album is called And Again Into the Light. This is a one-man project, it seems like. And they are exploring the unlikely pairing of black metal and Appalachian folk music, finding common ground in the soul-crushing desolation that lies at the heart of both genres. That's from the article that I'm reading here. And I have to say that I was blown away from this album because the first track, when you listen to it, it starts off, like they said, the Appalachian folk music. So it's like very acoustic. There's some banjo playing going on. And you don't really know what to expect. So what I was expecting from that opening track was I was expecting another witchcraft black metal, which is all acoustic stuff, very mellow. But then in the second track, the fucking black metal kicks in, and it is fucking stellar. It is stellar. It was just incredible. Reading here from the article again. Blast beats, grinding riffs, twanging acoustics, and back porch fiddles to create a powerful, emotionally resonant epics like Dead Loons, which is, I think, the second track that I was talking about, A Snowless Winter, and The Embers at Dawn. Again, this is a fucking wonderful record. I highly recommend people check this fucking record out. It was really fucking good. That was at number 10. Oh, I skipped over number 9 by mistake. Oh, yes. Okay, so here's number 9. This is one of the ones I covered as a new release when it came out. And I believe it was an album of the day for me. King Woman, Celestial Blues. This is her second record, and the article says that it wields a mighty array of voices. On the title track, she speaks her words breathily, and then on Golgotha, she slips into a smoky, hypnotic croon. On Boggs, she adapts a ragged, distressed howl, and on Psychic Wound, she unleashes a full-blown shriek. Yeah, that's pretty much very much describes the all-encompassing power of this woman's voice. And it was, again, this is another one that's very good. It's very good. It's also like, it's a good mix of stuff. Like, there's not one particular style that you are, one particular style that she's kind of like hanging on to. It's a very good mix of stuff all over the place. And it's really fucking good. Let's see. Number 8, Skepticism, their album Companion. All right, so this is a band that's been around for the past 3 decades. The pioneering funeral doom group has conjured the raw essence of eternal torment with punishingly slow tempos, fugue-like church organ, and vomited vocals. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. Again, like, the albums that as we're going by, they just got better and better. So, like, that first one was great. King Woman's great. This one's even better. And again, it's like the funeral doom sound that they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And again, there's even some surprisingly avant-garde stuff in here that, again, just really, really fucking kills. This particular article mentions specifically the sound culminates on final track The Swan and The Raven, which contains all the shadows and fleeting glimmers of hope that define the band's best dirges. Dying never sounded so good, as it says, and that was pretty good. This one, the next one, I don't really remember it very, very much off the top of my head. The band is called Portal. They're extreme experimental metal. They hail from Australia. This is their 6th studio album, and it sounds like it was recorded in one of the most grim and repellent pits of hell. Let me see. I'm just looking through it here. Chainsaw guitars vie for the opportunity to flay your skin. Drums pound with the footsteps of giant demons bearing down on newly arrived souls. And you can practically smell the infernal offal as vocalist, their curator, spews forth one malignant incantation after another. Yeah, this is pretty good. I had to re-listen to this one.
Okay.
Number 6 is Tribulation, Where the Gloom Becomes Sound. I think this is I want to say this one have been one of the ones I listened to for albums of the day or when it first came out, but I can't remember. Excuse me. But this is their 5th full-length studio album, and they are described here as death prog psych metal. So a little bit of death, a little bit of prog, a little bit of psychedelic. And this was, again, very good. And I think that's a pretty sufficient description of them. There's a lot of stuff going on here. A lot of wall of sound. They fill up the headphones. They're very, very good. But the next one. So the top 5, I think I have a little bit more to say here. So we're going to go right into the top 5. Number 5, Converge, Blood Moon 1. Now, this is their collaboration with Chelsea Wolf. And holy shit. Holy shit. It was amazing. It was so good. To tell you the truth, I think this should have been a little bit higher on the list. The combination of the music and Chelsea Wolf's vocals, it is fucking incredible. Here's something that they wrote. There's none of the compromises or watered down ideas that so often mark supergroup style projects. Everyone brings their A game here. Their respective visions and talents blended to create a remarkably haunting post-metal song cycle that's as brutal and bracing as it is melodic and atmospheric. And that right there sums it up 1000%. Because there's a lot of stuff that's very, like they said, brutal and bracing, but it's also extremely melodic and very atmospheric. Like the whole album from front to back is just It's pure joy to listen to. It's fucking wonderful. Seeing that this is Blue Moon 1, of course, we can only hope that there will be a Blue Moon 2. But at least we have this one, and it is spectacular. It is so good. Oh, this one was great. Number 4 is Carcass, Torn Arteries. Holy shit. All right, so 2013 was the reunion LP with Surgical Steel, and that was incredible. That was so good. And man, between then and now, 8 years, they have not lost a step. It is fucking full throttle for like straight up in your face. Just, oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. Like, this is pretty much like textbook extreme metal. They have songs on here like Flesh Ripping, Sonic Torment Limited. This one is a hard grooving mid-tempo, like Eleanor Rigor Mortis. Oh man, just, it's so good. Yeah. I highly recommend anyone checking out Carcass right now. They're fucking killing it. They're killing it. All right. Number 3, the top 3 are pretty much albums I've already talked about. Number 3, of course, is Gojira Fortitude. Pretty sure I covered this one pretty extensively when I first listened to it for new album releases. And it gets better every time I listen to it. This is a band that, like, every time you listen to them, you find something else that you missed in like the previous listening. And just their real ability to like mix and match different kind of styles and ways of doing things. And again, they are they're really great. They're fucking incredible. So well deserved. Number 3. Number 2, this is Mastodon, Hushed and Grim. And I think this one could have been a little bit lower. As a matter of fact, I probably would have switched Converge with this one. So I think Converge should have been number 2. Mastodon could have been number 5. This one, it's full on, like, very proggy. It's a little bit more mid-tempo. It's a little slower. Not as, like, vicious as their previous records. Like, it's still good, but it's just, I think I could have done with a little bit more heaviness to it. Maybe even a little bit shorter, because this is a double record. It's like almost 90 minutes long. So it's, again, like I said, it's good, but it's not, it shouldn't be number 2. It should be a little bit lower.
Can I guess number 1?
Go ahead.
Iron Maiden Shinjutsu.
Of course. Iron Maiden Shinjutsu. So we have talked about this one pretty extensively. Of course, re-listening to it, and this is another one that just like the last maybe 2 or 3 Iron Maidens, it takes like 2 or 3 listens to really get into it. And on the subsequent listens, like when I saw the list and I was ready to listen to it again, I found myself like actually like remembering more this time around, enjoying it a little bit more, being a little bit more engaged in it. So there's still some pacing problems. I mean, some of their songs do run very, very long without much changing. So it is like some of our previous complaints have been about their repetition and stuff like that. And this album does not, definitely suffers from that a little bit. But there are things on it that are just very, very good. And the thing is, Iron Maiden has been walking the same stride for a while now. It's not something that we're surprised by with this sound. So anytime they release a record, you probably know exactly what you're going to expect. But the thing is, that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, so number 1 record, according to Rolling Stone, of 2021 for metal is Iron Maiden Shinjutsu.
I should probably listen to that album again.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be worth it. It'd be worth it.
Yeah, I mean, not like I don't have a billion other things to listen to right now, but, you know.
Oh, I know, right? For sure. For sure.
Yeah. But let's take this opportunity to start looking at our Instagram albums of the day for the past few weeks.
Sounds good to me.
And we're going back about 2 weeks where you started with Snuggles from Devin Townsend.
Yep. I mean, that was just the the second album he released that week. You know, it was Snuggles and the Puzzle. I believe I already talked about it. It's a very ambient record. So it was just very calming. And I'm pretty sure at the time I was probably either reading or working on some shit at work that I needed something just very kind of calm and collected. So that was the way to go for me for that day.
Right on, right on. I had Ruin of Romantics. Next up, you had Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, I believe.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I was still a little bit on my Black Sabbath, what's it called? My Black Sabbath rabbit hole. So, and I think we had talked about it previously where it feels that like Sabbath Bloody Sabbath may be replacing Volume 4 as my favorite Black Sabbath record. Mm-hmm. This is probably decades in the making, but like I've held on to Volume 4 for so long as my favorite Sabbath record. But the more I listen to Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, the more I fall in love with it, which is fucking, it's, you know, it's great.
Yeah. I finally took a listen to Wardruna, and I was pleasantly surprised.
Cool.
So that was good. I don't know which one. I don't know if you had one for this day.
Tool. Yeah. Okay. I listened to Tool Anima.
Okay, and moving on. speaking of, see, there's Panopticon from you.
Yep, for sure.
Speaking of bands that I have been meaning to listen to forever and finally did, Waitain.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so that was good. Some good black metal-ish type stuff. So finally took a listen to them. This one's probably Red Moon Architect. This one's yours, I believe.
No, I believe I did Volbeat that day.
Okay.
Outlaw Gentlemen and Shitty Ladies.
Then oh, I did Red Moon Architect. I mean, I forget what I listen to sometimes.
That's why I started writing it down in my notes.
Yeah, seriously. You skipped this one, but I did Aborted, the Necrotic Manifest.
Oh, nice.
Aborted is pretty kick-ass, so what can I say? This one was me, the Cataphile Q. I've mentioned them a long time ago, but they came up on the possible, the like, hey, if, you know, you might like this band on Instagram. So went back and listened to them again, and I was blown away by this record, which is their latest. But definitely, I highly suggest this album. I have a hard time remembering half of it, but it was definitely very much worth it. Next up, you didn't have one this day, did you?
Yeah, I missed a few days. It got busy at work, so.
I did Buried Beneath, which was another band that was suggested by Instagram.
Uh-huh.
You did Blood Moon by Converge.
Yep, which I just discussed.
Yep. Then you did Witchcraft, Black Metal.
Yep, probably just another day where I need something quiet, and I had literally just talked about it 2 seconds ago. You know, it's just the front man with an acoustic guitar singing some songs, and it's wonderful.
Next up, you picked Majestica.
A Christmas Carol, yes. We got into a Christmas music after, for a little while. I love that record. That record's great. It's so cheesy and awesome. It's just power metal Christmas. It's fucking fantastic.
I listened to Propagandi as was a suggestion from one of my clients. He kind of said that towards their later career they went a little bit metal. No, they are very much they're heavy punk basically.
Okay, but the name sounds familiar. Like I've heard of them before.
Yeah, they're really good though. Next one you did Shai Hulud.
Yep, that's the Dune inspired one, of course.
You did next. You did Trans Siberian Orchestra.
Christmas Eve and Other Stories, because it was Christmas Eve. That was yesterday. So I think we all picked Christmas albums that day.
Yep, I picked John Denver and the Muppets because that is my go-to Christmas album.
Oh, for sure.
And today's album of the day is going to be what we discuss during our podcast because I am calling that. So,
well, might as well double down on it then. You and I will double down on that one.
Yep. And I also posted up a picture of my new T-shirt, which says "Ask me about my podcast."
Isn't that a great shirt?
Yes, it is. I'm actually wearing it right now.
Yes, sir. Wonderful.
So yes, that is our last 2 weeks. That pretty much covers like most of what we would cover at this point because we have albums a day. I don't think there's much else coming out for the rest of the year. Nothing to worry about. So next year will be a joy because I am looking forward to a few things coming out, including the fact that I also just pre-ordered the new Star One.
There you go.
Yep.
There you go.
And so we go on to general news.
No. What have we been listening to?
Oh, what else have we been listening to?
Go ahead.
What have I been listening to? let me pull my Spotify, actually. I've been going through a lot of Twitter and a lot of Instagram trying to find bands to follow and whatnot. And press the one button. So 200 Stab Wounds, Demolish, Lagwagon, Invivid Clarity, the Macho Man rap album.
That's hilarious.
Stellar Darling, Trivium, Old Man Gloom, Nabal of Scaris, Aborted, Ingested, Red Moon Architect, Naglfar, Waitane, and that's pretty much where I stopped.
Interesting. That's a good mix of shit right there, buddy.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's basically been coming up with on Instagram, like, you should follow these guys, and I'm like, I know the name, but I don't know the music, I might as well check them out.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the whole freaking Instagram, Spotify, all that shit's good for. So, I mean, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
All right, so peak season at work kind of ended the last couple of days, the last 2 weeks. So this is my peak season playlist. So I was listening to our 10-word review artist, which is going to be released. When is that coming out?
10-word reviews?
Yeah, for the next our next one.
I gotta record mine. I gotta get Pat's footage. I'm hoping by like Wednesday.
Oh, badass! Okay, cool.
Yeah, it's definitely gonna be before the end of the year. So like, with or without Pat, it's coming out.
Copy that. A couple bands I was listening to. I listened to the Tesseract, their last three records. So Polaris, Altered State, and Sonder. I listened to the last three Volbeat records, which is included. Outlaw Gentlemen and Shady Ladies. Rewind, Replay, Rewind, Rebound, Replay, whatever the fuck, I can't remember. And the newest one, which I can't remember.
Serpent in the Mind?
What's that?
Serpent in the Mind?
Yes, Serpent in the Mind. Yeah, that's again, and just like with Iron Maiden, Volbeat, I need like one or two listens to really get into it. Their newer stuff, and yeah. They're good. It's good. It's Volbeat and it's great. I listened to The Contortionist, their album Language. They just came across on things you like similar bands from what you've been listening to. Mm-hmm. So I just listened to that. And then
I gave you a copy of one of their albums.
What's that?
I'm pretty sure when in the box all the stuff that I gave you in the past, you should have a Contortionist album.
I'm pretty sure I do. You're absolutely right. And doing some work and some reading during the week, I listened to the Deep Focus playlist on Spotify, and then I listened to a bunch of podcasts. So listened to Bruce's last podcast. This is one they had a guest on it. Francis Rossi, I believe his name, from Status Quo. That was a pretty good chat that he had. I listened to the Perpetual Chess podcast because I was. Up until it ended, I was watching the World Championship of Chess, and they had a podcast that was covering the matches. That was pretty good. Devin Townsend finally issued a new podcast. It's been months since he had a podcast. His podcast is usually is just really him talking. And up until a point, up until this recent podcast, his every episode he was covering a different album that he recorded, whether it was Strapping Young Lad or his solo stuff or whatever. This one was just him kind of catching up and like just kind of like rambling. It was like almost like he called it like brain vomit. He was just really talking. And he has a very great, his singing voice is great, but his talking voice is very good. He has some ambient music in the background, which he probably recorded himself. And that was very good to hear from him again. So that was wonderful. And of course, the last one is my new favorite podcast, Doom Pod. I listen to a few of their episodes throughout the week and weeks.
Tell the audience about your shirt mishap today.
Oh, here's the thing. So the Doom Pod, they have merch that they sell, of course, just like we do on that we have T-shirts and stuff like that. They also have T-shirts. And Brandy had gotten it for me for Christmas. And I had gotten her the same shirt for Christmas. But the thing is, when she got the shirt for me, she had bought herself a shirt. So I got her a shirt that she already had. The thing is, I also got her two of those shirts because I didn't know which size would fit her. So we have four of these fucking shirts running around now, and it's great.
So you got 141 2/3 chance wearing this t-shirt.
So one of the cool things that they do too, actually, when you order a shirt from them through their merch store, they send you a personalized video. I'm just saying, like, it's a pretty cool thing. It's kind of like a cameo like thing with a purchase of a t-shirt. So it's like buy one, get one free kind of thing. It's a pretty cool deal they got going on there, and they're cool guys. So it was good to hear from them and stuff like that. So,
I will reiterate that the Shred Shack will not be doing that for anybody who buys a shirt. Just buy the fucking shirt.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it. That's it. That's all I've been listening to.
Okay. Actually, I will say that I've been listening to one other thing, and I'm still on the Lordi box set.
How's that going?
Man, dude, like, okay, so I started to listen to the last album, which is the very Rob Zombie influenced one, the industrial one.
Uh-huh.
And dude, it sounds so like a Rob Zombie record, but it's good. But one of the records in it, it's called Skeletric Dinosaur.
What?
And it's based very much on 70s rock along the lines of very early Kiss.
Ooh, okay.
You listen to the first full track, and the way that when artists will just make noise instead of like sing at first, they'll be like ah, something like that.
Yeah.
Mr. Lordi makes these sounds, and it sounds exactly like Gene Simmons. I was like, holy shit, this is straight up Kiss, no question asked.
That's hilarious.
It's down to like exactly like that, and it's really good. I just really like that they went out of their way to write in that style for so many different tracks. Like all these different albums have all these different styles, and it's like it all works. It all works just really well.
That's great. That's great. Yeah. So I just wrote down in my notes here for previously on. I am going to go back and I'm going to try and listen to whatever is available on Spotify for the Lordi box set.
Okay.
They've been doing it every couple of weeks for the digital releases, although you got all seven in a row, all seven right in the box set. So whatever's available on Spotify, I'm going to try and backtrack and listen to at least one, maybe two of them if I got a chance.
I'm going to give you a heads up, though. The two that are on there are Night and Day.
Polar opposites?
Yeah, Super Fly Trap is basically disco.
And
Abracadabra is like 90s metal.
Oh, nice. Well, yeah, we talked about this. The one that's like kind of influenced by like Pantera and Metallica, right?
Yeah. But like like if you want to pick one, like if you want to hear a weird one, go for Superfly Trap. If you want to hear one that's like if they got really balls to the wall metal, then go for Abracadabra.
Sweet. I'll just pick one randomly and go with it.
Yeah.
And hopefully I would like to listen to, because it's going to be 2 weeks from now, I hope to listen to at least more than just the one. So we'll see how that goes for me.
Listen to for if you're going to listen to any Lordi album, listen to The Arockalypse, because like it's got their most famous song on it, and probably some of their best tracks.
Cool, badass.
Yeah, I love Lordi. They're so great.
All right.
Yeah. Anyway, let's
go to
Jim.
Anything else you got?
No, just been listening to that. And getting ready for hopefully what may be a album review, but that's a different story that will be unveiled later.
Sounds good. So we're going to head into some general news.
General news.
All right. So fortunately enough, in the Christmas spirit, we do not have any obituaries today.
That's okay, because you bought me the Transformers movie. And
yes, I most certainly did.
We mourn the death of Optimus Prime every time.
Oh my gosh. But, you know.
I'm a 36-year-old man. I shed a tear for Optimus Prime every time.
Every time. You know. But Megatron must be stopped, no matter the cost. All right. So heading into general news. Very short topic today. The Rolling Stones had the highest grossing tour in the world this year, according to Pollstar, the trade publication dedicated to covering the worldwide concert industry. The No Filter track generated a total of $115.5 million from just 12 concerts. All the artists.
That is about $10 million per show.
That is a staggering number. Staggering. Other artists whose tours landed in the top 100 include Guns N' Roses, Kiss, Slipknot, and Megadeth, and Lamb of God when they toured together. So here are some of the rock and metal artists who made the Pollstar's 2021 and top 100 worldwide tours list. Okay, number one, of course, is the Rolling Stones at $115.5 million. At number three is the Green Day, Weezer, and Fall Out Boy tour, which made $67.3 million. Number seven is the Guns N' Roses tour, $47.3 million.
Yep.
Kiss is at number 30 with $16.9 million. Number 42 is Slipknot's Knotfest Roadshow, $12.3 million. 48 is Korn, making $10.3 million. Number 53 is ZZ Top, making $9.4 million. 61 is Megadeth and Lamb of God, making $7.9 million. 63 is Shinedown at $7.5 million. 64 is the Black Crows at $7.4 million. 69 is Primus at $7 million. 76 is Foreigner at $6 million. And number 85 is the Foo Fighters at $4.5 million.
I want to say that some of these are probably due to how tours were done in 2021 because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of those I'm looking at and I'm like, damn, really? Like, fucking Foreigner. Yeah.
don't sleep on Foreigner.
Fucking go get it, Foreigner. Some double vision.
I was going to say, don't forget about the Foreigner belt.
Yeah.
Don't forget about the horror, though. All right. Moving on. Just real quick note here that Udo, of course, the band fronted by Udo Dirkschneider, has signed with Atomic Fire Records.
Which we just learned very recently, is an offshoot of Nuclear Blast.
Oh, no shit.
Yes. Pat told us that. He basically said that a offshoot occurred, creating Atomic Fire Records, and they took a good portion of some of the big names of Nuclear Blast's roster with them.
Oh, I do remember this part of the chat. Yes, yes, yes. So I, for previously on, I want to look into Atomic Fire Records and see what that's about and be a little bit more informed for us on the next podcast. That should be interesting. Would you stop scratching the chair, you bitch? Sorry, that's my cat.
Tell Brandy to go away.
All right, last but not least here for general news is global music company BMG and global investment firm KKR announced that they have acquired the entire music interest of American rock icons ZZ Top. According to Variety, BMG paid some sources placed at around $50 million. The ZZ Top agreement includes a buyout of the band's publishing catalog and their income from recorded royalties and performance royalties. Previously, BMG served as co-publisher and administrator of ZZ Top's publishing catalog. So another band selling their shit.
But also, I've seen enough commercials of Billy S. Gibbons rocking some sweet boots lately. So he's got some awesome Billy F. Gibbons boots.
Yeah, yeah. He's always had some. He's always had a really good sense of style.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, look, everyone's crazy about a sharp-dressed man. What are you talking
about?
Well,
I mean, yeah, for sure, for sure. It's not just the girls.
Yeah.
All right, so that's it for general news. Nothing really. Like, again, most of these sections are going to be pretty short. It looks like we're in a slow news week here. Moving on. For So Let It Be Written. So Graham Mitchell, who was Motorhead's tour manager in the late 1970s and early 80s, was also an avid photography enthusiast. A large format tabletop book, Fast and Loose, Snapshots from the Graham Mitchell Archive, 1977 to 1982, collects nearly 100 of his snapshots, including many that have never been published before. It is an up-close and personal look at one-of-a-kind group that is essential for any diehard fan. Published by BMG, it's available now in the U.S. and will be released in the U.K. on December 30th.
Right on. I mean,
photo books never really did much for me anyway.
Yeah, I was going to say, photo books, not so much for me. Like, depending on the photo, because, like, yeah, it's actually kind of funny. There was an article I read recently. I don't remember who put out the article, but it was basically the top 25 pictures summing up 2021.
Uh-huh.
And some notable ones on there, of course, like the site of the insurrection on January 6th and so on. But one of them is actually a picture of Mr. Lordy getting his COVID injection. in full outfit and everything, getting his injection.
That is amazing. I love it. That is awesome.
Now that kind of thing I can get a kick out of. So.
Yeah. Well, this next one you're probably more up your alley because it's an autobiography. And it's John Corabi who released his autobiography, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, on June 14th of 2022. It was originally supposed to come out on April 12th, so it's been postponed. And it's coming out via Rare Bird Books. It was written with the help of Motley Crue historian and author Paul Miles.
I am absolutely going to read that and buy that and read that.
So just add that to your pile of music biographies to look at and read eventually.
Yep, that'll come up later on in, a little light reading.
Nice. I like it. All right. So we're up to not spreading the disease. We only have one to report for today. Evanescence has postponed the remaining 5 shows of its U.S. tour with Hailstorm due to multiple COVID-19 cases within the touring party. The concerts in Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Camden, Newark, and Worcester will now happen at the end of January.
If I'm not mistaken, the Wolves in the Throne Room tour was also canceled because of COVID or something to that effect.
Yeah, there's a couple of shows. I mean, this new variant, Omicron, is apparently spreading pretty quickly. I hear things in New York are not doing too well at the moment. Of course, here in Texas, we haven't noticed a goddamn thing. But across the world, things are spiking again. So we'll probably
go ahead. I have a hard time talking about this new variant without accidentally calling it Unicron, which is yet another Transformers reference for this episode.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, as soon as I saw it, Omnicron, I'm like, oh, my God, no. Oh, my God.
Where someone else comes back from the grave.
Ah, French champagne. Have you seen those clips?
I love those clips.
Oh, my God. Spectacular. Ah. Fucking ridiculous. Oh my God. But that's it for Not Spreading the Z's. Let's head into He's the One They Call Dr. Feel Not So Good. Queen guitarist Brian May tested positive for COVID-19.
Not apparently, due to over enthusiastic gardening.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, shit. I mean, that just, he just tears fucking glute muscles for that shit. And KISS frontman Paul Stanley underwent shoulder surgery on December 14th.
Well, that's, I guess that's his wanking arm.
No one's getting any better. We're still waiting to hear about fucking Deano's fucking knee surgery.
Yeah,
he was supposed to get like about a month ago, so we haven't seen or heard anything from that. You know what? Here's what I'm gonna do. Previously on, I'm gonna see if I can find any information about Paul Deano and his fucking knee surgeries. Yeah, see how that went. Okay, so breaking the law. Tool drummer Danny Carey is slated to appear in court on January 12th in connection to an arrest for an alleged assault at the Kansas City airport. Law enforcement sources say Carey allegedly assaulted an employee working security at the airport on Sunday, December 12th. A police report states that Carey allegedly, quote, did intentionally cause an unlawful offensive contact upon the worker by yelling at the complainant, you're a fucking
faggot.
Yeah, I didn't want to say the word.
Well, it adds to the actual point of it, which is basically like, dude, 2021.
Yeah, dude, come on. He said this repeatedly and jabbed the complainant in the chest repeatedly. The 60-year-old musician, I had no idea he was 60, by the way. The 60-year-old musician was booked for misdemeanor assault and was released on bond. The police report is being forwarded to prosecutors for review, and potential charges will be followed. He could be hit with a fine for the incident up to $13,900.
I mean, come on, dude.
Yeah, dude. What the fuck? Whatever.
I wonder what his problem was.
Right? And the thing is, like, Danny Carey is not a small dude. He's a big man. Like, I think he's like 6'7". He's a large man. So it's like, what happened? Like, there's nothing about that. There's a video of him being arrested, but there's nothing, of course, like, it's always like they start recording after something happens. So it's like, what actually led to him being a fucking douche? So I don't know.
Yeah.
All right. But, you know, Metallica breathed in these last 2 weeks. So you want to hear about it?
Yeah, sure, why not? It's better than hearing about Danny Carey.
Yeah. So San Francisco Mayor London Breed proclaimed Thursday, December 16th, as Metallica Day in the city, ahead of the band's citywide takeover last weekend for its 40th anniversary. Metallica drummer Lars Ulrich and bassist Robert Trujillo appeared with Breed and Another Planet Entertainment president Greg Perloff for a press event where an official proclamation was made commemorating the first 40 years of the legendary heavy metal band, the first 40 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're going to the next 40 years.
We're going to the next 40 years now. Yeah, yeah. And Metallica has announced that it has become an investor in Trillnet, parent company of Triller versus Triad Combat, Triller Fight Club, Fight, and other leading media brands. Terms of the investment are confidential.
Cool.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know enough about that kind of shit, so.
Yeah. I do have a thing here in Feudin. I don't particularly want to go into it. It's it's Eric Clapton versus a bootlegger in fucking Germany. Apparently, this woman, she's a widow. She was selling bootleg copies of a concert of his on like eBay, and the German authorities got a hold of it, and something along the lines of like she was issued a cease and desist order, and that usually ends it. But she's like, you know what? He's going to take me to court. Take me to court, and they took her to court, and they won. and everyone's like now kind of like blasting Eric Clapton for doing this, but his management's like, yo, Eric Clapton has nothing to do with this. It's his management team, his lawyers in Germany doing this. Like, it's a fucking shit show.
Yeah, I mean, Eric Clapton shouldn't be worried about other people stealing his music. He's already stolen from every black musician ever. So,
I mean, Jesus Christ. I mean, I like Eric Clapton all, but like the last couple of things I've heard about him in the news has not been the greatest.
Oh yeah, you know, the dude is a monstrous douche. Like,
he is an
absolute racist scumbag.
Not just that, he's also an anti-vaxxer, and it's just like he's pretty rough.
Yeah, it's a little rough, you know. God's kind of a dick.
Yeah, God's kind of a dick.
Yeah, a little rough.
Yeah, so, you know, fortunately enough, I can separate artists from life, I guess, or music or art from artist or something like that, whatever the term is. And I can still listen to fucking Derek and the Dominoes, but man, he's a bit of a douche. All right, moving forward, we have nothing to report on Alcoholica. No Hardwired, so nobody's coming out with any new coffees as of late. But we do have some merchandising, of course. And Iron Maiden have once again teamed up with toy collectible company Funko to create a new line of figures based around the band's legendary mascot, Eddie. Due in February 2022, Due in February 2022 are Stranger in a Strange Land, Somewhere in Time, Live After Death, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, and Knights of the Dead. The new figures will be available from Entertainment Earth.
I've got to buy one Iron Maiden Funko Pop toy. Like, I haven't bought any yet. Like, I have one for Freddie Mercury. I have one for Alice Cooper, but I don't have one for Iron Maiden.
And the thing is, now you have your pick of them. There are so many. Yeah,
exactly. I really need to just find one that I really like, and it might be the Stranger in a Strange Land one, because I'm pretty sure if I remember the cover of the Stranger in a Strange Land single, it's Eddie in like a hat and trench coat, in the cyborg version, the kind of the cyborg version from Somewhere in Time.
Yeah.
It's kind of badass looking. So if that's what it's gonna look like, I'd probably go for that one because that looks badass.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Hell yeah. All right. So nobody has any puzzles coming out of their album art. That was a thing that was going on for a while back, like about a year ago. Yeah. So that will lead us into our commercial break.
And before we go into the commercial break, I want to say that the new flavor for the band Night Demon is available on Night Demon's website. So one of their new flavors, not one of the ones we've reported on thus far, different one is available now from Hella Hot Hot Sauce through Night Demon's website.
Badass. What kind of flavors is it? Do you know off the top of your head?
No idea. I have not looked that much into it. Just that there was a festival recently and they had a table there, and now the band is selling it through their website. It's not available yet on Hella Hot's website, but they have restocked some things that were out of stock. I believe including Ghoul and Exhumed hot sauces.
So, copy that. Yeah. Well, on the next episode, I'm going to look into Night Demon. Is it night as in N-I-G-H-T or K-N-I-G-H-T?
Night as in evening, night.
Okay, gotcha. All right. So I'm going to look into them, listen to them a little bit, see what they're about, and we'll report on that and see if it'll be something that we look into for the hot sauce.
Yep, but until then, commercial break number two. Strictly commercial.
Greetings, metalheads. Dan Mack here, and if you're a fan of putting a little heat on your meal, spice up your life with one of the many hot sauce flavors available from our sponsors at Hella Hot Hot Sauce. All natural, no preservative, and California-made, Hella Hot Hot Sauce provides small-batch artisan hot sauces made from fruit and pepper blends that emphasize aroma, taste, and of course, heat. With several flavors available, some seasonal, others year-round, and collaborations with members of Ghoul, Exhumed, Guar, and Hatebreed, there are plenty of options to suit your palate. Head over to hellahothotsauce.com and buy up a couple bottles now.
All right, it's going to be quick and it's going to be pretty short. There's not much to report here. So studio recording news, German thrash metal veterans Destruction will celebrate their 40th anniversary by releasing a new studio album, Diabolical, on April 8th, 2022 via Napalm Records.
Very cool.
Nonpoint will release its new EP, Ruthless, on December 27th. So the day that this is, comes out on Overkill Radio and Spotify and whatnot.
That is correct.
Nonpoint will have a new EP out. And Ashes of Ares, the band featuring former Iced Earth members Matt Barlow and Freddie Vidalis, will release its third studio album, Emperors and Fools, on January 21st, 2022 via Roar! Rock of Angels. The LP ends with the 11-minute-long epic Monster's Lament, which features the long-imagined joining of forces between Matt Barlow and another former Iced Earth singer, Tim Ripper Owens.
That sounds awesome.
Right? Right? I cannot wait to hear this.
Yeah, I'm gonna lie to that. Just shut up and take my money.
Yeah, I am pretty pumped. I am pretty, like, that's something that we've been thinking about, like, we wanted to hear for a long time. Like, yeah. Fucking forever ago, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's see. We're heading into recorded live shit. Orianthe will film a concert DVD on January 8th, 2022 at the Bourbon Room in Los Angeles. The set will be released at a later date via Frontiers Music SRL.
That would be cool.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Last but not least, here's Rewind, Replay, Rebound, Reissued. Guns N' Roses is putting together a deluxe reissue of the Use Your Illusion albums for a tentative summer 2022 release.
Did you listen to the new song?
Oh, Hard School or whatever?
Yeah.
I had not.
It's actually not bad.
Really?
Yeah. It's not classic Guns N' Roses, but it's definitely not like Chinese Democracy.
I was going to say, is it better than Chinese Democracy?
No, I like Chinese Democracy. But, like, it sounds enough like Guns N' Roses as they once were.
Uh-huh. You know? Okay. Okay.
But it's a quick 3-minute track. Nothing special. It's kind of like a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just kind of cool, kind of there, but not awful.
Putting it out there in the universe, just trying to like make sure that people still remember that yes, we are Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, like Axl still sounds good in studio at least. So.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, you know what? Here we go. I'm gonna put that on the. Previously on, we'll check that shit out. Hard School, right? Yeah. All right. New GNR track. Copy that. All right. Are you ready to get to a little extra?
A little extra. A
little extra. So the good that men and women do. We actually have something to report on this. So Brian Head Welsh of Korn and Tommy Green of Sleeping Giant have partnered with new ethical social media app Pivot to raise funds for the nonprofit Run Against Traffic, which supports aftercare initiatives for survivors of human trafficking. The partnership comes in the form of a unique dollar per download model. The social media startup Pivot will be donating $1 to Run Against Traffic for every app download between now and January 11th, up to 100,000 downloads. It's a method that opens the door to new ways of doing both social media and counter-trafficking activism. Tommy Green, formerly of metalcore outfit Sleeping Giant, is the founder of Run Against Traffic And he's quoted as saying, our long-term vision was to create a foundation for supporting human trafficking survivors using the tools of running and community participation, similar to what Lance Armstrong's Livestrong Foundation created for cancer research, he explains. We envision empowered people working together to put the crime of human trafficking in a museum.
I can get behind that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. That's a pretty cool initiative there. That's awesome. That's it for the good that men and women do. So we are up to crowdfunding tracker. It looks like you have something in here.
I did mention it last time. Since then, they have stopped doing their crowdfunder because it looked like it wasn't going to make it, but they're still funding the album. So Contumacy is going to be releasing their debut or what the album they were working on. Regardless of not making their crowdfunding goal, they ended it themselves prior to the actual legitimate end. So, but they're still going through with the album. So cool for them.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yep. But otherwise I haven't looked at crowdfunding. So.
Gotcha. 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 How about Shit I Want? And here we are, Christmas Day. We both got a bunch of shit today. Do you still want something?
I want the world now.
I was gonna say you want all things. I know.
I want all the things. Actually, right now, like I'm pretty content. I just wish there were more hours in a day to read.
I was gonna say the same exact thing. Like I wish I had a little bit more time to indulge in the reading that I'm trying to do. Just adding to the piles of stuff that like. You got me a book today. Pete got me a book today. I still have two books for my birthday to read. Like, I am fucking stacked of reading material and just not enough time in the day.
Yep. But I will make mention of some stuff that I am reading when we get to the next section or the section for a little light reading.
Copy that. So down the rabbit hole. Did you happen to get to a rabbit hole in the last 2 weeks?
Yes, the rabbit hole has been through our social media in attempts to get our numbers up and you know encounter new music and encounter other like-minded metalheads out there. I have been going around on Instagram and on Twitter looking for people to follow, bands to follow, bands to listen to, and so on and so forth. And that has pretty much led me down a little rabbit hole of research. So, found some cool people, found some cool bands. Our Twitter follower account went over 300.
That's pretty awesome.
So that went up there. We're almost at 500 Instagram followers. I already have my goal numbers for next year, so I'm going to keep doing this every so often, getting into research bouts and so on, and trying to find more music. And, you know, we get a lot of stuff to our email that I really need to put more attention into pursuing for the radio show and for the sake of following on social media.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's going to be more of a rabbit hole in the near future.
Yeah, gotcha. For sure. Yeah. I also went down. It was a very brief rabbit hole because it only started on like Thursday and was led into Friday. But I just needed something to listen to. And so I started with a go-to record. One of my go-to records that I listen to is the Star One Live on Earth record. So I listened to that and then I was like, you know what? I'm in the mood for some Arion. And the thing is that when I listen to Ariana, I usually go for some of the latter day stuff. So it's usually like either Human Equation or The Theory of Everything or even 01, you know, I'm not too familiar with The Source or Transitus yet. But I decided to go way back and I actually listened to Into the Electric Castle and then followed that up. Yeah. That was, whoa. And then I followed that up with Universal Migrator 1 and 2. So that was a very, very brief. But when I say brief, we all have to realize that these are all double records. So these are like six CDs six CDs worth of music that I'm listening to for my rabbit hole, and I keep saying it's short. It's short because it's only three records, but it's fucking, it's ridiculously long. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it was a brief Arjun, rabbit hole that I went on in the last 2 days before recording.
I need to do that myself because I really actually have to sit and listen to Transitus.
Yeah, same here, and I have to do the same thing with The Source. Like I listened to it a few times when it first came out, but I didn't get into it as much as I did the previous three.
I think the problem with The Source is that it loses me on disc two. Like I love disc one, and then disc two I just kind of just zone out. I really
miss
the chance.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. It's kind of like Iron Maiden's disc twos, like the last two, like with fucking Book of Souls and Senjutsu.
Yeah,
you know, I think like the problem I have, I think with something like that is usually pacing. It's usually like, at least with Arjun, he's trying to tell a story, so it's like I think his problem is like the pace of the story is kind of losing it. Where Iron Maiden is just they just need to mix their tracks up a little bit. Like you can't have three 14 minute long songs in a row, bro. Come on. Like, and this is coming from a guy who loves that shit, but like you still need to mix it up a little bit, man.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's it for my rabbit hole, so there's that.
Yeah. Okay. Legacy of the Beast.
Let's hear it.
The day after we last recorded the podcast, I played the game. I finished up the first world, which was the Wicker Man stage. Stage two or the second world you enter is the sand world, the Egyptian stage from Power Slave. But instead of going to that, I ended up going back and playing the game, replaying some of the stages, because it's one of those things that's like it challenges you to do certain things in the fights, like use this many attacks, do this kind of thing. So I kind of went back and started doing that instead of moving forward. And I just need to move forward in the game, but it's starting to unveil more about, like, you know, you have to recollect pieces of your soul and go kick that ass and shit like that. So, I mean, it's a fun game. I haven't really reached the point where like the difficulty curve comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't really been close to like losing yet, but I'm sure that's coming soon.
That's awesome. So this is a mobile game, right? That you're playing. So it's on your phone.
Yeah. It's a mobile RPG. So it's kind of like the old school lineup Final Fantasy. You choose an attack. You take turns.
Oh, okay. I got you. I was curious about it because like I. You know, the only game I play on my phone is Pokemon. So it's like when I go to a gym to battle, I'm just tapping my phone. I was wondering what the format of this game was.
No, this has a lot more to it. Like if you have to pick which character you want to use to attack. You have to pick the attack. You have to pick who you want to hit. And if you choose to attack them, if you hit the screen at a certain time, you can get a bonus to it. So there's more involved in it. So there's more engagement to actually playing the game than just, you know, pick an attack and that's it.
Yeah.
So you got to be a little bit more alert for it. So,
gotcha.
But it's been pretty good so far.
That's great.
And I forgot the Eddie that I unlocked. I think it wasn't the Book of Souls Eddie, but when you finish the first realm, you unlock a new Eddie.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, awesome.
Yeah. So I gotta remember what that was. So.
Badass. All right. So what about a little bit light reading? What do you got?
Fuck, dude. Okay. So since the last 2 days have pretty much been off, so I've been trying to read Machiavelli's The Prince. Kind of been really slow with that, so I started reading. I started reading a book that I was supposed to read for my supervisor for my license, And I read through more than half of it. I have no fucking idea what's going on.
Shit.
Yeah, I have no idea. And then today, for Christmas, you bought me two books.
Mm-hmm.
I started reading the one that's the Stop Overthinking one, which
yes,
I started
yes.
reading because it's more so related to my job. Mm-hmm. And I'm more than halfway through it already.
So, gotcha. Wow. Wow. Quick read, yeah. Or is it?
It's 180 pages. But like there's only so much space on the page taken up by words. So I'm on page 111 already.
Oh shit. Wow.
So I'm going to have this done by like tomorrow. So,
are you retaining the information? Is it making more sense than the other book that you're reading or what?
A lot of it technically I know because of what I've learned, what I do, I've been in therapy and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it I know, but it's kind of fine-tuning a lot of that.
Yeah, so I got you. Gotcha.
That's been the benefit of it. It's like there were techniques of de-stressing that I knew, but I didn't know like the details of. This goes into details of it. This also comes up with other things like you may be stressed because this. So here's how you deal with that.
I got you.
So, but after that. After at least the overthinking book is done, I don't know what I'm going to start because I want to start reading a music book. And today, from Pete, I got Lords of Chaos, which is about the bloody rise of the satanic metal underground. On the cover, there is a church burning. And basically the way that Pete described this book is that if we were to make a human time capsule, this book should be in it.
Ah, very
so
cool.
So I look forward to reading some of that. And eventually, for the following section, for your viewing pleasure, is to actually see the two-hour documentary, which Pete says does not really live up to the book.
Oh, so, bummer. Bummer.
But still, I would like to see that eventually.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely worth a watch just for fucking, the sake of watching.
Yeah. But that's been my reading for the last basically 48 hours.
Gotcha. So I finished The Lord of the Rings about a month ago. It was like right around Thanksgiving I finished The Lord of the Rings. So I did that. Then I started reading the Silmarillion, and if anyone who knows anything about Tolkien and the Silmarillion, it is a tough read.
That should have taken you right into Nightfall and Middle Earth by Blind Guardian, what the album's about.
Right? I mean it's intense. It's for anyone who doesn't know and it was not a fan, whatever. The Silmarillion is essentially the Bible stories of Middle Earth, and it's like from creation and up through. The Silmarillion, the book itself, covers the time from the moment that the Earth is created all the way up to the end of the War of the Ring. So it's kind of like footnotes and like summarizes the Lord of the Rings, the trilogy, but it also gives you like fucking eons of fucking backstory. And it like there's so many different characters and names and things that they do. It's a little overwhelming. But fortunately enough, that's my jam. But then things picked up back at work, so I wasn't able to read that as much at work. I was reading it off my phone through the Kindle app. But I've been able to read. I'm rereading Dune again because my intention here with this series is that I intend to read the first six novels that Frank Herbert actually wrote. So Dune, Dune Messiah, and Children of Dune, leading into God Emperor of Dune, Dune Heretics, and Chapter House Dune. Those are the six books the original author Frank Herbert wrote. And then from there, I'll consider reading the sequel novels and the prequel novels that are written by Brian Herbert, which is Frank Herbert's son, based on his notes and stuff like that. I'll consider that. And then on top of that, again, I got books from Pete. I got a Stephen King book from Pete for my birthday that I need to read. the Nurgle book you gave me, and then today you got me Leonard Cohen. He was a novelist before he became a singer-songwriter, and you got me his Beautiful Losers book, which I want to read. So I have a lot of stuff on my plate right now.
It's like I said, finding time in a day and finding that motivation to actually sit and sit in silence.
Well, one of the good things about it now is that for Christmas today, Brandon gave me a lamp to go on my side of the bed because I don't have one. So now I can actually like put a lamp on and actually read in bed, and I think that's where I'll spend a good portion of time doing it instead of just sitting there scrolling on my phone because I can actually see that. So we'll see how that goes for me. Because despite the fact that I have the Kindle, I still like physical books. That's one thing that I've kind of slowed down significantly on my CD collecting. I haven't bought a CD in like almost 2 years, but books, I still can't get past it. Like I have the Kindle, but I still can't get past owning a book and holding a book. So.
Oh yeah. It's the best.
It is the best. It is the best.
But that's it for a little light reading. I have anything for your viewing pleasure this week. I did not watch any concert footage or anything like that this week.
Nor did I, not this time.
I will hopefully do that sometime in the next few days, though.
Cool.
Probably Thursday, because like I'm super busy Monday through Wednesday, and then Thursday I have like nothing.
Well, yeah, then it's New Year's, so.
Well, Friday is New Year's Eve, but like Thursday is the day before that, so I'm like,
yeah.
I'm just gonna twiddle my thumbs.
For sure. All right, so we're gonna head into our next commercial break.
Yep, commercial break number three. Well, number two.
Number two.
Forgot I said that. Strictly commercial. For those of you that love that doom stoner genre of rock and roll and heavy metal, make your way over to the Cosmic Peddler. Selling CDs, cassettes, and of course plenty of vinyl from the best artists on labels such as Fuzzorama Records, Cosmic Artifacts, and Stoner Witch Records, among many others. Head over to thecosmicpeddler.com now.
Concert news. All right, so we got nothing from the comfort of your home, although the way things are going, we might be hearing about some more streaming stuff in the near future. So we'll keep that, keep you updated on that one, of course. We got some festival news here, though. So Into Eternity has been added to the 2022 lineup of the Hyperspace Metal Festival as headliners for the event's third night on April 17th. Into Eternity has stepped in as the replacement for Stryker, which is unable to perform due to a scheduling conflict with its upcoming U.S. tour with Beast in Black and Seven Kingdoms. In addition to the news of Into Eternity being added to Hyperspace Metal Festival, the band will be giving festivalgoers a special treat as they will be performing with their 2006 The Scattering of Ashes lineup that sees original members Tim Roth on clean death vocals and guitar, Troy Blech, Planet Eater, bass and clean death vocals, Stu Block, formerly of Iced Earth with clean and death vocals, and Jim Austin on drums. Reunite along with current guitarist Matt Cuthbertson, who's also in Untimely Demise. Into Eternity will be executing tracks from The Scattering of Ashes, an album that has sold over 15,000 copies in the U.S. and peaked at number 45 and on Billboard's top independent albums charts, along with giving fans a taste of new extreme music from their forthcoming yet-to-be-titled full-length album.
Looking forward to that new album, but I gotta say, dude's name is Blake, but the way that you pronounced it makes you think of all those deathcore memes. Anyway, I started crying.
Blech. Blurg. Yeah, I know. I mean, that is definitely my gimmick on this particular show is I can't pronounce shit. So,
but I just love those memes though.
That is pretty funny. Yeah, for sure. Last bit of festival news here is it's official. The 70,000 Tons of Metal Cruise will return in January of 2023. The 70,000 Tons of Metal Cruise creator, Swiss concert promoter Andy Piller, confirmed that the event was back on track after being canceled in 2021 and 2022 due to the coronavirus pandemic. That's it for festival news.
Yeah, it's coming back, but like, boo, it being canceled many times, boo.
Yeah, well, it's probably safest. It probably is safest to plan it that far in advance, in all honesty. Especially because it's a cruise. You guys are stuck on a boat, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You ready for some touring news?
Yes.
All right. John 5, who has recently voted as number 7 on Ultimate Guitar's Best Metal Guitarist in the World list, has announced that he will be hitting the road along with his band, The Creatures, in the spring of 2022 for the Sinner North American Tour. There is a San Antonio date, April 30th, at The Rock Box.
That's cool.
Yes, it is. Coheed and Cambria has announced details of the Great Destroyer Tour, a U.S. headline run, which will feature support from special guest Sheer Mag. The Coast to Coast trek is set to get underway on February 16th at the legendary Pappy and Harriet's in Pioneertown, California, and will continue through mid-March, giving audiences an opportunity to see the band live in intimate clubs across the United States.
All right, on.
The Iron Maidens, the world's only all-female tribute to Iron Maiden, will team up with Swiss all-female metal act Burning Witches for a limited number of dates in the U.S. in May.
The Iron Maidens are actually coming to San Antonio in 2 weeks.
Listen, they've been here a few times.
Yes, they have, and I miss them every time, and now I want to see them.
Oh, well, in 2 weeks, you should have your car back, right?
Well, no, technically I can't because we're celebrating Pete's birthday that day.
Oh. In 2 weeks?
He was making mention of it.
Oh, okay. Cool. Primus has announced an extensive 46-date coast-to-coast extension of its wildly popular A Tribute to Kings tour, paying homage to prog rock legends Rush. A Tribute to Kings will find the Bay Area trio performing Rush's 1977 album A Farewell to Kings in its entirety, following a set of their own music. As bassist Les Claypool told Rolling Stone, the tour is about paying tribute to a band that has given him so much inspiration over the years. There is a San Antonio date here, April 16th, at the Majestic.
Interesting.
That is very interesting. Interesting. Korn will embark on a headlining tour in March with support from Chevelle and Code Orange. Produced by Live Nation, the 19-date arena trek will begin on March 4th in Springfield, Missouri, and make stops in Greensboro, Providence, and Albany, among other cities, before wrapping up in Wichita, Kansas on April 1st.
Code Orange is doing their own tours, too. Could be wrong.
You may be right. Beartooth has announced the Below Tour Part 2. The second leg of the headline trek kicks off on March 26th in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and runs through May 3rd in Louisville, Kentucky. Also appearing on the bill are Silverstein, The Devil Wears Prada, and Era. The trek follows the original Below Tour, which took place this past summer and was sold out at every turn.
Wow.
Papa Roach has announced the first leg of his North American Kill the Noise Tour, featuring very special guests Hollywood Undead and Bad Wolves. The trek, produced by Live Nation, will make stops in the United States and Canada, marking the band's first headlining tour in 3 years.
Okay.
Adrian Smith and Richie Kotzen's Project Smith Kotzen will play its first ever live shows in the U.S. and U.K. in early 2022. Nothing here, I don't think, though.
Probably not.
Overkill will embark on a U.S. tour in March 2022. Support on the trek will come from Prong. Not here,
Speaking of tours that I'm pretty sure are not coming this way either.
Which is a shame, because the last time I saw Overkill was at the Alamo Music Hall.
Yeah.
That was one of the few shows that actually sounded decent there.
But I think I'm pretty sure Overkill is completely skipping Texas on this tour.
Yeah, I don't think they're hitting even the big three at all.
I don't think they're hitting anywhere in Texas, period.
Yeah. SoFi will embark on another U.S. tour in February 2022. The 35-day trek will kick off on February 7th in Las Vegas, Nevada, and make stops in Seattle, Minneapolis, Nashville, and Baton Rouge, among other cities, before concluding in Gallup, New Mexico on March 19th. Joining Soulfly on select dates will be 200 Stab Wounds.
Right on.
Last but not least here, Meshuggah has postponed its previously announced U.S. tour originally planned for 2022 or early 2022 to September or October of 2022. The new dates will kick off on September 16th in Worcester, Massachusetts and conclude on October 16th in Atlanta. While the ongoing pandemic has been throwing various curveballs on us all the past year, ultimately delaying the completion of the upcoming Meshuggah studio album, there are other concerns that have forced us to make this unfortunate decision. The determining factor is the need to prioritize the physical health of one of the band members who is currently undergoing medical treatment related to a skin condition on his hands, hindering him from rehearsals and from all in all playing his instrument. While we are optimistic for his future recovery, we know it will not be possible for him and the band to be ready to perform already in February of 2022.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
For sure, for sure. All right, that's it. No one-offs, nothing like that. I don't think anyone has seen a show as of late.
Nope.
Heavy metal on the charts?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, noteworthy point here. Papa Roach's Scars has been certified silver in the United Kingdom. So when we talk about these, we talk a lot about the RIAA here in America, about what their standards are for sales and whatnot. And so this is just a little bit of clarification what it takes to get these certifications in the UK. So to earn a silver certification for a single in the UK, Papa Roach had to sell 200,000 units of the song. The platinum, gold, and silver certifications awarded by the British Phonographic Industry, or BPI, in recognition of sales milestones have included audio streaming data since June of 2015, with 1,000 streams counting as one sale.
I feel like that song's been around for a long time.
For a while. But if you want to put it in the way that they sold 200,000 units. So let's just say if it was all streaming, they had to stream the song 2 million times to get to that milestone.
Gotcha.
So just thinking about that sort of thing. But we're going to head into the top 200 here on the Billboard chart, so I still have access to it. I had done a quick scan of top 200 while we were at Mom and Dad's house today for Christmas. And we are going to talk about a lot of Christmas records on this one. I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. All right. So this is Christmas Day. So you have to imagine there's going to be a shit ton of Christmas music in this top 200 chart, specifically because it's ending today. All right. But in the top five, the number one album is Adele's 30. It's been on the charts for 4 weeks. It looks like it's been in number one all 4 weeks.
Right on.
All right. Number two is a new album from Juice WRLD called Fighting Demons. All right, number three is their first album that we're going to be counting for, our girl Taylor Swift, Red, Taylor's version. Now, remember, for any listeners that we have here, Dan and I have re-examined our position on pop music, particularly singer-songwriter stuff, and our artist of choice to cover on this podcast in that particular genre of music is Miss Taylor Swift, and we keep track of how many records she has on the Billboard Top 200 when we do this. And I think in the last few weeks, she's had 7 to 8 on the top 200. So she's been about.
We maxed out at 10.
She did a 10?
We maxed out at 10 like 2 weeks ago.
God damn. Fuck yeah. All right. So that's number three, Red, Taylor's version. That's the first album for Miss Taylor Swift on our top 200 here. Number four is Michael Bublé, Christmas. I am not going to bother keeping count of how many Christmas albums are on this bad boy because it is fucking rough. And the number five album for this week is Olivia Rodrigo, her album called Sour. Now, here we go. Are you ready? Number seven, Mariah Carey, Merry Christmas. Number eight, Vince Guaraldi Trio, the Charlie Brown Christmas soundtrack. All right. Number 11, Nat King Cole, The Christmas Song. Number 14, various artists, A Christmas Gift for You from Phil Spector. Yep, Number 17, Pentatonix, the Best of Pentatonix Christmas. Number 18 is Andy Williams, the Andy Williams Christmas Album. Number 20 is Bing Crosby, Christmas Classics. Told you this is just a lot. Number 24, Burl Ives, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Number 25, Frank Sinatra, Ultimate Christmas. Number 27 is Carrie Underwood, My Gift. I can only assume that's a Christmas album. So, number 28 is Kelly Clarkson, When Christmas Comes Around. Brenda Lee is at number 30 with Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree. Number 31 is Let It Be, the soundtrack from the Beatles. Number 33 is Kelly Clarkson's Wrapped in Red. Number 34 is Abbey Road by the Beatles. And the second album from Miss Taylor Swift on the top 200 is Evermore, number 37. Number 37. Oh, okay. I do it again. Nope. All right, number 43 is Gene Autry, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Greatest Hits by Queen is at number 46. Third album for Miss Taylor Swift on the top 200 is number 48, Folklore. Taylor Swift, Folklore, number 48. The third album she has here. Number 52 is White Christmas by Bing Crosby. Number 54 is Dean Martin with the Dean Martin Christmas album. And number 56 is Taylor Swift's fourth album on the top 200 charts, Fearless, Taylor's version. She has four on the top 200. We got Fleetwood Mac's Rumors is at number 58. Diamonds by Elton John is at number 61. Last Christmas soundtrack by George Michael and Wham is at 64. By the way, I must go ahead.
Did you pass this year?
I survived Whamageddon. That's 2 years in a row. I have not heard the song yet at all.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
I don't think I've ever lost, so.
There you go. Surviving the Whamageddon. All right. The fifth record for Miss Taylor Swift on the top 200 is at number 67 with Lover as number five for our girl Taylor. 68, Perry Como. Greatest Christmas songs. Apparently it's a new release, so there's probably someone throwing shit together and throwing it out there. All right, that's a 68 new Perry Como Greatest Christmas songs. Number 69 is Elvis Presley, the classic Christmas album. Number 70 is Perry Como again, a Perry Como Christmas. Wow. All right. Number 74 is Elton John Lockdown Sessions, just, you know, for shits and giggles. All right. Robert Plant and Alison Krauss has their new album out, Raise the Roof. It is at number 83. Number 83. Feliz Navidad by Jose Feliciano is at number 87. The Jackson 5 Christmas album is at number 88. A lot of Christmas here. Nevermind is at number 94. Evergreen by the Pentatonix is at number 98. Creedence Clearwater Revival, the 20 Greatest Hits, is at number 99. Bob Marley and the Wailers, Legend, the Best of 100. We are going into the second half here. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Greatest Hits, is at 103. Metallica's Black Album was at number 114. Gwen Stefani, You Make It Feel Like Christmas, is at 115. The Berry Christmas EP by Chuck Berry is at 116. Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Christmas Eve and other Stories, number 119. Okay. Greatest Hits of Green Day is at number 124. 124. AC/DC's Back in Black is at number 134. Oh, here's a really weird re-entry. Tron Legacy soundtrack by Daft Punk is at 138.
What?
Right? That was very weird. Yeah, I don't know. All right. A Drummer Boy Christmas by For King and Country is at number 139. Noel by Josh Groban is at number 140. Prince of the Revolution, Purple Rain soundtrack is at 144.
Yeah, buddy.
A Pentatonix Christmas is at 151. Greatest Hits by Guns N' Roses is at 153. The Beach Boys Christmas album is at 155. Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas soundtrack is at 156.
By the way, real quick,
yes, sir.
You need to write down to listen to the Small Town Titans doing You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch.
Small Town Titans, You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch. Stand by. Let me write this down, get my notes out.
I put it on the radio show because I just happened to find it online, but it's pretty good.
All right. Say that again? Small Town what?
Small Town Titans.
Small Town Titans, Mr. Grinch. Copy that. On it. All right. Back to the charts here. At number 163 is John Lennon. Give Me Some Truth. Interesting. Number 164 is 1989 by Taylor Swift. That's her sixth record in the top 200 for us. A Holly Dolly Christmas by Dolly Parton is at number 170. The Carpenters' Christmas Portrait is at number 172. Greatest Hits by Foo Fighters at 173. Ella Wishes You a Swinging Christmas by Ella Fitzgerald. Apparently, it's a new record out. It is at 174. Beatles One is at number 181. Wow. Weezer's self-titled record is at 183 as a re-entry.
Wow.
Interesting, interesting. All right. Taylor Swift's Reputation is at 189. That's number 7 in the top 200 for Miss Taylor Swift. Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack is back in the mix here at 190. This is weird. A Winter Romance by Dean Martin is at number 191. Taylor Swift, Speak Now, is at number 196. That's number 8 for Miss Taylor Swift in the top 200. And rounding out the top 200 is a gentleman named Young Boy Never Broke Again and his album Top.
I want to say that despite Christmas, Christmas can't even topple Taylor Swift.
I know. Eight in the top 200 for Miss Taylor Swift.
Yep.
Her influence is too strong.
That's right. It's just all right. Event.
All right. So are you ready for our topic of discussion for real this time?
What album are we talking about?
Rainbow Rising, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You fucking douche.
we are doing our discussion album on blast. Iron Maiden, Peace of Mind.
Peace of Mind, yes.
You are far more prepared for this than I am, so I'm going to let you kind of take the lead and start off a little bit.
Well, I will take the lead here. I'll just want to pull up my notes on it, my track notes here. But we first might as well talk about the album itself as a whole here. I had the Wikipedia page pulled up for anybody who needs any information on it. This is their fourth studio album by Iron Maiden. It was released on May 16th of 1983 by EMI Records in the United Kingdom and by Capitol Records in the United States. It is the first album to feature drummer Nico McBrain, who had recently left the band Trust and has been Iron Maiden's drummer ever since. It was a critical... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say replacing Clive Burr. Who was
Clever, yes.
From Iron Maiden self-titled to Number of the Beast.
Correct. It was a critical and commercial success, reaching number 3 on the UK album charts and receiving platinum certification in the UK and North America. All right. So, are you ready to get into this track by track?
Let's do it.
All right, Where Eagles Dare. All right. So I love the opening drum on this particular song. It's a very strong album opener in general. The middle section, the harmonies are absolutely spot on. One note I have here is that some spots can be a little shorter or altogether taken out, like cut altogether to tighten up a little bit. Especially after the solo and before heading into the ending of the song. But that is just indicative of their overall style. And once you get past that, it's of course, it's a totally enjoyable song.
I actually personally don't think it's as strong of an opener as some of their other albums.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right.
I think they have much better openers. It does have a lot of great parts to it. The solos and the melodies and all that, all really great. But I feel like it lacks the punch of a song like Invaders or a song
yeah,
like.
Yeah, I can see that.
So I think it lacks a little bit, but it's still a great song. It's just lacking a little bit.
Right. We should talk about the inspiration for this particular song. The influence of this one is, of course, the movie Where Eagles Dare, which is a movie that came out in 1968 by Brian G. Hutton and was scripted by Alistair McLean. Just a little background information, because Iron Maiden is very much known for what their inspiration for songs are. A lot of literary stuff, some movies here and there. They tend to like, I think that's what keeps their music timeless, to tell you the truth, is because they're not a topical band, you know? Yeah, yeah, was you? Oh, there you go. Okay.
No, I'm here. I'm here.
Okay. Very cool.
I'm just taking in what you said.
Oh, I gotcha. All right. Next up, we have Revelations. This one is definitely a favorite live track. The immensely catchy riff with the space for the haze is just incredible for the audience. I also like how they take it back a notch and slow it down after the first verse, going back into the opening riff, and then the song itself takes off. These changes happen throughout the song, and the dynamics of the song are just really great.
This song I actually didn't appreciate until we started seeing it live.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like, just the as you said, the part where like they go they do like the hey part and everything. Like, I just did not have an appreciation for this song until I saw it live. And to be fair, like, this is like probably one of the, like, despite the classicness, if you want to make up words for this, the classicness of the album, this is probably an album that I had less interest in and I grew to appreciate over the years for various reasons. Seeing Revelations live was one of the reasons why I started to appreciate it. And even and considering the song, according to Wikipedia, a lot of the song is influenced by Aleister Crowley, who the song was written by Dickinson. Dickinson has a huge interest in Aleister Crowley.
Yeah. I'm actually like waiting for that to come up in his podcast with the psychologist that he's talking to. That should be very interesting.
Yes.
If that actually does come up.
I'm sure he'll make it. He'll move heaven and earth to make it happen.
Yeah. I'm also reading here on the Wikipedia page that Revelations actually also includes lines from G.K. Chesterton's hymn, O God of Earth and Altar. And of course, the remainder of the song is influenced by Aleister Crowley.
I'm just wondering how much of each part is which, but I think I know. I think the softer parts are from the hymn.
Oh, okay. That would make sense. That makes sense. So this next one is, we're going to talk about it. It's one of the more exotic influences for their compositions here, including Greek mythology, although it's slightly altered, but we're going to be talking about the Flight of Icarus here.
Fantastic song.
What's that?
Fantastic song.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I wrote down here probably one of my favorite storytelling tracks Iron Maiden has done. Aside from Hallow Be Thy Name, I think Hallow Be Thy Name is very, very good storytelling in it. And here comes our first real chorus of the album. This is the third track, first real chorus of the album. And one thing I can say about Iron Maiden, and one thing I appreciate the most about them, is that they don't always rely on a catchy chorus to keep you engaged. But when they do, it's fucking huge.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so... I'm a big, big fan of this song. This is another one that I think we've seen live a handful of times. And again, it's just really, really good.
I feel like this one gets a little overlooked as far as live tracks go nowadays.
Okay.
I mean, there are other tracks we've seen played so many times. Like, we've seen, I think out of the near 20 times we've seen Iron Maiden, I think one of the songs we've heard most is probably Fear of the Dark.
Yeah, yeah, that seems, well, the thing is, I mean, that's a, like a live staple just because of the sing-along factor.
That and the song Iron Maiden we've probably seen played the most.
And that's the Eddie factor.
Yeah. Yeah, you know? Exactly.
I mean, it's just the pure entertainment factor on those particular tracks that I definitely get why they keep that in the set list no matter what. Except maybe when they play their new album front to back and then they play, you know, Iron Maiden, Number of the Beast, and whatever, Run to the Hills. All right, next up we have Die With Your Boots On.
Probably one of the better tracks on the album.
Yeah, I was going to say the opening harmonies are fantastic. I got this one as another catchy-ass banger, and that chorus is incredible. While Maiden could be a little formulaic in their song structures, that formula works so well that it's hard to argue against it. They've made an entire 40-plus year career writing the way they do, and we keep coming back for more.
Yeah, it's what also does things for me as far as Iron Maiden goes is that any track that has writing credits from Adrian Smith is usually among my favorites. And both Flight of Icarus and Die With Your Boots On both have writing credits from him.
Oh yeah, okay.
So he's writing a song, he's writing he's writing a Wasted Years. He's writing like some of the solo parts from Wicker Man and stuff like that. Like he's writing some good shit.
You know, Wasted Years is one of my favorite tracks. That's yeah, for sure, for sure. Here is my favorite track, pretty much my favorite Iron Maiden track of all time, and it's the fucking Trooper. This is probably the track I would play for someone who never heard Iron Maiden before. It has all elements of their sound in one song. It has the gallop, it has the harmonies, it has Bruce's vocals and thematics, all compacted to a quick just over 4 minute package.
Yeah.
They're back to a lack of chorus here, but it doesn't matter. I'm drawn to the pace, the cadence, and delivery of the verse. It's just unfucking real.
The whoa was close enough to being a chorus. So
yeah. And the thing is, it's like, again, this is a song that doesn't need a chorus. It's all about the verse, because that's where the story is taking place. And again, for me, it's all about the gallop of the riff and Bruce's fucking cadence and delivery of the verse vocals. It's fucking, it's so goddamn good that I every time that song comes on live, it's fucking over.
Speaking of it being live, it was inspired by Alfred Lord Tennyson's The Charge of the Light Brigade.
Yep. And
I'm pretty sure before they play it live, most of the time before they play it live, he actually recites some lines from the bit.
Definitely one of my favorite live tracks of all time. One of my favorite Iron Maiden tracks of all time. The number of times that we have seen him, and I think we're well over 20 at this point. It's always the fucking, it's a showstopper for me. It's a showstopper for me. So, next up we have Still Life, which is influenced by Ramsey Campbell's 1964 short story, The Inhabitant of the Lake. This one has the intro is a backward message, which is
it's the brain speaking, basically.
Yeah, it's the phrase itself is taken from a satirical album, The Collected Broadcast of Idi Amin, by Bird and Alan Corin. What Ho and What Ho Said the Ting are phrases that also crop up regularly on McBrain's Listen with Nico tracks from the first 10 years collection. So it's they were just fucking around.
If nobody's ever heard any of Nico's tracks from the first 10 years collection, it's him just rattling off information about the tracks that are on the singles, but it's like he's out of his mind.
Yeah. I love listening to him talk. It's hilarious.
Yeah, he's got a lot of character to him. So
But what I have written here is the love the slow open into the big pre-chorus, right into the next verse, kind of teasing the big chorus coming. The song itself ends a little abruptly, which doesn't feel like a Maiden ending, but it's all right.
This one I'm not too crazy about. Like saying the song now, I can't even think of what the song sounds like.
Yeah.
So yeah. I haven't listened to the album since a month ago, but I can't even think of what this track sounds like.
Right.
So definitely, right. Definitely not in one of their catalog for sure.
All right. So the next one up is Quest for Fire, which is based on the 1981 film by Jean-Jacques Annaud. Here it feels the album hits a little bit of a lull. The song isn't bad. It's just a little too much like the others that we have already heard on the rest of the record without anything that sets it apart. And at under 4 minutes, this track is the one that feels the longest.
I have to say, though, I know that a lot of Maiden fans don't like this track because of the fact that it sounds very cheesy.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the chorus is a little cheesy. I mean,
it is a little cheesy, but God, I love this song.
Really? You do love some cheesy shit, though, I have to admit.
It's so much fucking fun. I fucking love this song. I don't care. And you're talking about those catchy choruses. Yeah, it's cheesy as fuck, but it's a catchy chorus.
Yeah, I mean, I can't deny that, but it's pretty cheesy.
Yeah, I mean, it's cheesy.
Yeah. So next up, we have Sun and Steel, which is based on the life of a samurai named Miyamoto Musashi. And the title is taken from an essay from 1968. I wrote down that this is another big, fun, catchy chorus, but up until that point, I felt the same way about this song as I did about Quest for Fire, which means it was a little bit of a lull, didn't set anything apart from the rest of the record. Like,
I like this one. I like the chorus. I like the way the chorus leads into the end of the song. I do appreciate this song for what it's worth. But again, out of their catalog, I feel like it is overall forgettable.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It in and of itself is a great track.
Mm-hmm. All right. And last but not least here, we have the album closer to Tame a Land. Now, this one was meant to be entitled Dune after the novel, but after seeking permission from Frank Herbert's agents, the band received a message which stated, Frank Herbert doesn't like rock bands, particularly heavy rock bands, and especially bands like Iron Maiden. And they were forced to change the name to Tame a Land. Yeah, it's hilarious. But one thing that Maiden does well is not beat around the bush. You know exactly what they are singing about with virtually zero subtleties. I'm a fan of the mix of Bruce's staccato and longer note delivery here. Another chorusless song where the emphasis is the story and the verses, and then that ending instrumental section of music is just fucking immense. You know, they know how to do epic. Like, we can't deny that at all for this particular band.
And I gotta say, this continues the trend that they started with Number of the Beast, where the closing track is an epic.
Yeah, like Hallowed Be Thy Name, and then
Hallowed Be Thy Name. Then there was Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner.
Yes.
I forgot the one that was on Somewhere in Time, Somewhere in Time had Alexander the Great.
Oh wow, yeah.
And then there was one. I'm trying to remember the one for Seventh Son. That one was only the Good Die Young wasn't an epic. So they kind of like for four albums they closed on an epic.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, like the funny thing is that they weren't able to use the title Dune for the song title, but like, dude, like the songs they specifically use words that Frank Herbert created. Like, do they have to pay him a nickel every time they fucking say something? Like, what the fuck?
Well, they might have to, considering that he especially doesn't like Iron Maiden.
Actually, for them, it's 25 cents. Fuck that. Jesus. But so of this particular record, we're not gonna like rank them or anything like that, but let's just give a best worst song for this one. So you go first, best song, worst song.
Oh boy, best song, Die With Your Boots On.
Nice, I like it.
Worst song, probably Still Life.
Gotcha. For me, of course, best song is Trooper. Can't get enough of that song. Again, by far my favorite and all-time favorite Iron Maiden track. And what's the Quest for Fire is the worst. Not a fan.
Also, I'm looking at the again, I'm on the Wikipedia page, and they have the 1995 Castle reissue bonus disc information, which a lot of those tracks ended up in Eddie's archives. But they had their cover of Cross-Eyed Mary by Jethro Tull on there.
Oh, and that's
a great cover.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The other one was Fire by Montrose, which I'm not familiar with, so I can't say much. But
yeah, and I'm also reading the notes here. It says that apparently initial pressings of the album had to Tame a Land erroneously titled Dune in its original, or as it was originally supposed to be written. That's hilarious. I
have a copy of that.
That is funny.
Yeah.
That is great.
So for you, for best and worst of the album?
The best and worst, again, the best was Trooper and the worst was Quest for Fire.
Break my heart.
I just can't do it with Quest for Fire.
It's funny. If you look at the writing credits, the Trooper and To Tame a Land, you know, which is the Trooper, your favorite, To Tame a Land, about Dune, and then he also wrote Quest for Fire. So you're like, what happened?
Yeah, I'm getting the full spectrum of Steve Harris's writing abilities right here. Just the whole fucking thing.
Now, I'll say that, like, as far as a lot of their early catalog, I won't go out of my way to listen to this one in full.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I would prefer Number of the Beast. I prefer the debut album. I would take most of the original. If you took everything prior to Seventh Son, this might be the second to last album I would rather listen to.
Interesting. Very, very interesting.
Again, not that it's bad, but comparatively, I just don't think it matches up.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that for sure. Yeah. I can see that for sure.
And you know what? If I actually gave more of a listen to Killers, which some people say is probably one of their best albums, I would probably say that this album is the lowest.
You know, yeah. I remember when we were doing the 10-word review for Iron Maiden, and I was all about, like, I felt like I was the only one that was like, am I the only one that kind of really digs this Deano stuff? Like,
the debut Iron Maiden album is fantastic. Killers, I haven't given enough attention to.
Okay, that makes sense. All right.
Once I sit down and listen to that, I'm sure I'd be like, yeah, let's do it.
Let's go.
So.
All right, so next time we do an album on blast, it'll be Rainbow Rising, right?
Yeah, we won't be doing that for a while because I need some time to write something. So I think we'll go for a list of some kind for next time.
Well, hopefully, maybe I can find another like top like 10 or something like that for 2021, and we can talk about that. Yeah. I'm sure there's a lot more out there right now.
I think by the next time, I'm willing to bet that there's going to be a Rolling Stone top 50 albums of the year.
Yeah, you want to do the whole 50, even though it's definitely not going to be just metal. It's going to be a whole fucking 50.
We can go through it, but you know, if it's not worth mentioning, we just pass.
I can see that, and then we can find a different list for that's more relatable to us.
Yeah,
I can get behind that.
So if it's something like, you know, that we don't listen to or that we don't care about, we don't know anything about, we can just go pass and move along.
If anything, if I do find like a top 50 for Rolling Stones, I'll look through it and see if there's any surprises that will that would affect us, and then we can go from there.
Okay, sounds like a plan to me.
Awesome, so, I like it.
On that note, we must make our curtain call because it is currently the 26th of December. We have missed Christmas.
For this podcast, we have officially missed Christmas.
And we are going to bed because we have a video to film tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, we do. Shit, yeah.
So go to bed.
Yeah, you too.
All right. So until next time, I'm Dan Mack.
And I'm Chris Mack.
And we are The Slime.